All right, good morning. Happy Friday. Welcome into the show. Weekend is almost here, and this program has arrived. We've got two great hours for you. Thank you for listening. Phone number 888-710-4ISN. 888-710-4476. We are compiling a list of listeners who want to be in the Writer Than You NFL Survivor Pool. A few of you have hit me up. My DMs are open on X. Have hit me up having you tell me, never really posted on X. It's not your thing. So you got on there. You found your old password. You let me know you want to be a part of that. Please keep doing that. Or you can just tweet at the executive producer, Ryan_Hickey, and the number 3. Man, another day of the week, another bit of evidence, Jerry Jones has lost the plot. This time, on the Mike Orvin, it's not really a show, it's just a YouTube channel. This time, Jerry tells on himself, and we will let you listen to him do that. We've got some ruminations to make on Travis Hunter and what he's going to be about in the NFL. I've got another, I like doing these, I live in L.A., I'm from Iowa. I still just get shocked when I hear of or see famous people around me. I've got a sports name drop and a philosophical question coming later in the show. Yep. There it is. Now Ryan knows it exists. You can listen to that a lot. Although I had to explain to him when I bring up his name, he doesn't play the name drop. He goes, but I'm famous. No, just try not to do that. The SEC is making, a pretty serious tweak to how they schedule their games starting next year. We'll talk about that. David Sampson's going to be on the show. We'll do buy or sell. It is Friday. It is bum of the week. And we already are going to have some Infinity Sports Network on Infinity Sports Network crime, at least in the nominations for bum of the week. Yesterday I told you correctly, because the show is called Writer Than You, that Lincoln Riley needs to be on the hottest of seats, that the future of his employment at his program that he leads should come down to this season. I am here to tell you today the opposite is true for Bill Belichick. And as much as the Jordan Hudson mania and the, I think, massive pressure that should come with being, at least at one point, considered the greatest football coach of all time, and the fact that he's Bill Belichick, and the fact that they've done a pretty nice job in the transfer portal, and just the buzz around him, despite all that, success for Bill Belichick is not going to be measured in 9 or 10 wins or a top 10 finish or flirting with the college football playoff or any other standard that's going to be easy to figure out this year. And that's not going to fit our easy little narratives, right? What pops on social media, it won't. If you can't condemn or praise, absolutely. Sometimes things are absolutely under the radar, which is dumb. It's part of the reason we're going to just fit in Travis Hunter. Nuance matters. Bill Belichick may fail, and he may succeed. But the standard for that, the timeline for that, the reality for that is not now. It's not today. It's not even the end of the season. And there's a few ways to sort of measure this thing. And look, I understand that UNC is paying him a massive amount of money. And so on a fair, on a proper timeline, that dude better deliver or he gone. And not just gone, it's an interesting risk for Bill Belichick. He's coaching to the collegiate level because he couldn't get an NFL job. You know it. I know it. Everybody knows it. And that means if he does fail, and I'm telling you, for me, 5 wins, and that would not be a great season, is not the final say on that if that were to happen this year. But if he does fail, 2-year timeline, 3-year timeline, I know, transfer portal speeds things up. If he does fail, it's going to jeopardize more than just UNC's gamble at bringing in a legend to try and elevate their so-so, to be kind, at best program. It's going to jeopardize Bill Belichick's ability to get jobs anywhere, including the NFL. That's a reality. There's a lot riding on this. And so that pressure, what he brings to the table, it all sort of adds to this notion he better win now. And people are trying to double down on this. Now, I'm going to pick on Mac Brown here. When you have colleagues and former colleagues talking about each other, they almost always have side agendas that are more about their egos and their insecurities and their pettiness and their failures than about being honest about people that they're competing against. Or at least in their own mind's eye. And that's true for Mac Brown. He was the head coach here. He's not. The guy that has a job is Bill Belichick. The notion that he is totally unbiased is false. So I just want you to hear that. But he speaks for a part of the population, a part of the football world. This was on the Herd with my buddy Colin Cowherd. Mac Brown trying to push this idea, and he's trying to do it with this sort of, with a little glazing that I don't think he means toward Belichick. Mac Brown pushing the false narrative that UNC under the hoodie better win big immediately.
Chancellor Lee Roberts has committed to football big time for the first time in North Carolina history. They are really wanting football to be good, so they're all in. The other thing is, every coach wants his own players, and they used to say it takes you 2 or 3 years to get your guys in there. He's brought in 72 new guys. So you got money, you can evaluate, and you can bring in who you want. I think he has a chance to win big and win big fast.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't think that at all. He wants him to fail so that he doesn't feel like a failure himself. And here's the reality for Mac Brown. You just hold on yourself, just like Jerry Jones did, and we're going to play that in 20 minutes. If UNC has never truly been committed to winning football, then why do they hire you? Are you saying your hiring before was not a commitment because you're not very good at your job and you were an also-ran who was just a showpiece and a show pony and not a winner? What are you doing here? Anyway, side note. Look, there's reasons to think that Belichick can be successful. There are. This is a program that is 7.5 wins, according to Vegas, as an over-under. And so 6 wins, not great. 8 wins, you're going to start to look a lot like, say, Colorado in year one, especially if you get off to kind of a fast start and then people catch up to you. 41 transfers are the second most in college football this year, and one of those lists that ranks those things puts that transfer business at 9th in the country. So there's going to be maybe some talent on the team. Now, it's also true that Belichick is coaching at UNC for a reason, and unless it's Jordan Hudson fell in love with, you know, the Carolinas, it's probably because he couldn't get the opportunities he wanted, in large part because at the NFL level, minus, remember, Tom Brady, he had losing seasons in 3 of his final 4 seasons. This is a guy, and I bring this up a lot because I don't think it should go unnoticed, who with a second-year quarterback who had shown some signs of promise when he was at the NFL level, did away with an offensive coordinator. Think of the arrogance, and I don't think he's a dumb man, and I've talked about that. I know Bill Belichick a little bit, and I really liked him in my interactions, but that is a smart person doing stupid things because they think they're smarter than the game. They're smarter than the business that they're in. So there's a lot of variables here. The fact is it takes a while to build a program. Even in the transfer portal era, even with Mac Brown trying to be like, you got to win now. Deion, a couple years ago, year one, 4-8? Bad start. Let me go to Nick Saban, the greatest college football coach of all time. And arguably, and many would argue against this, and that's fine, you don't win at the NFL level, maybe this is not right, but at least an argument for the greatest football coach of all time. In 07, before he revolutionized Alabama and was the tip of the spear of SEC dominance, and therefore dominance in the sport for a generation of football, Nick Saban showed up at Bama and went 7-6. Lost, remember this? Louisiana Monroe. That powerhouse, that juggernaut. They didn't fire him. Brian Kelly, back in 2010, first year at Notre Dame, I know we call him Lion Kelly on the show, but before that, 8-5. Kirby Smart, first year 2016, 8-5. Jim Harbaugh, first year, and this is a perennial winner. If there's anybody who sets expectations of winning year one beyond what's reasonable, it's that Harbaugh brother. 10-3. Good. Didn't set the world on fire. Remember Pete Carroll? Maybe one of the most successful football coaches in history, given his success at the collegiate and the NFL level. A mere 6-6 at USC when he started all the way 24 years ago. It's going to take a while. It's going to be a minute. The standards and the reality for UNC that'll be judged through the prism of this is Bill Belichick, this is his legacy, he's got a hot young girlfriend, we all like to giggle about it, it's a major story, right? Bill Belichick, the coach, is worthy of a spotlight. And whether it's a good idea or not, and I'm guilty of this too, he's also a TMZ trashier version of Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. And not in his life, just how we evaluate what he's about. Look, Bill Belichick's not the first guy in his 70s dating somebody in their 20s, all right? I'm not making a judgment on his personal life, but I'm not going to pretend that that's not something that draws a lot of attention and scrutiny and focus, and is it going to distract from him winning? And if he doesn't win, are they going to blame Jordan Hudson and Bill Belichick gallivanting about doing weird yoga poses on the beach where you're worried he's going to drop her and he's doing airplane, all the weird stuff that he, not weird, all the lovely romantic stuff that he does. Michael Lombardi is an interesting character, and he did media for a while. He's obviously a longtime Belichick acolyte. He's now the guy that basically runs, in effect, the front office of this college program. He can be curt sometimes. I don't mind Mike. I like Mike. Not everybody does. But he kind of says what he thinks. And it sounds to me here like UNC and their general manager understand that real success, that the real standards of whether they win or not, like Deion Sanders and Nick Saban and Brian Kelly and Kirby Smart and Jim Harbaugh and Pete Carroll, and by the way, maybe like a bunch of failures I'm not mentioning, will not be decided in the next 2 weeks or 2 months or 4 months, more like the next 18 months to 2 years.
I think what we want to try to do is build a program that has sustainability to it, right? I mean, you know, look, the last thing you want to do is have a program that wins and it falls apart. So my only concern is to grade the team today because we have a day off and then have a really good practice tomorrow. I think to me, that's the most important thing. I mean, one thing that I think that people that we talk about all the time here is, you know, intensity impresses, consistency transforms. And I think we're going to be really consistent.
The coach JB show brought that to us, and always gets me when a cliche actually resonates because I feel like I've been tricked. I feel like I'm not very smart. But that's a real thing. The best modern comp, and there aren't many, legends going to the collegiate level who half the people think are going to be a god and the other half think are posers who don't belong there, in an era where NIL and transfer portal changes your ability and the skills that it takes to interact with players, but also speeds up not just the expectations, but again, the chance to bring in this case, 41 new players before you've even coached a meaningful minute. The only comp that I think there is, because this era hasn't existed for very long, is Deion Sanders. And Deion is still, I think, a question mark. It feels a lot more comfortable to say he's going to succeed, although we'll see if he succeeds without Travis Hunter, without his son at quarterback. Deion needed time, and I'm talking Colorado. Deion needed time. There were ups and downs, but there were signs, in retrospect, that things were going to go well. Now, we had football from Deion to sort of assess these things. We haven't had a day of football from Bill Belichick, which is, again, why everyone's going to overreact if things go badly or things go well. Remember, Deion got off to a pretty good start, and it was, wow! And then he crashed and burned a little bit at the end of his first year, and it was, he sucks. And then last year, now it's the Big 12, so almost every school qualified here, but at the end of the year, Colorado had their destiny in their hands. They were a few wins in a row from playing in the college football playoff. That is success for Colorado. That is success for Deion Sanders. And the same sort of parameters look like they're in place. Big personality, big brand, which plays in 2025, check. Deion had it, Belichick has it. Surrounding himself with all kinds of people who seem like they're pretty good at their job and are loyal, check. Deion brought in a lot of folks. Got rid of some too, but Bill Belichick has done that. He surrounded himself with folks that he knows. Massive amounts of transfers. Remember the stories about Deion Sanders forcing everybody out and the woe-is-me-ism of that? Bill Belichick's not getting the same reality, maybe because UNC is an even lesser program than Colorado was when Deion took over. At least Colorado had a history. I know it goes back 20, 25 years pre-Deion, but there was at least a history of success. UNC doesn't really have that. And this grinding ambition to prove all the doubters wrong. I think Belichick's going to be successful. That will not be decided this year. So here's the question I have for you. My answer is success for Bill Belichick this year, unlike Lincoln Riley. Lincoln Riley's in year four, by the way. And you just heard, again, Mike Lombardi say, we don't want quick success and then failure that follows. That's USC. 11-3 year one, we're going to do it. 8-5 in year two. Well, Caleb's going to the NFL. Maybe that's good. Maybe he's a little, 7-6, 2024. The reverse of that is success for me for Bill Belichick. If UNC goes 7-6 this year, and they look good, and they're competitive, and you go, all right, their quarterback play or their offense or their defense, something that you can look at, like you kind of could at Colorado, is starting to click, and you can see the green shoots of success, and you go, all right, not all these transfers worked, but wow, a lot of them did, and there's this buzz now, and they've won some big games, and even though there's been letdowns, Belichick's 41 transfers last year had a 50% success rate, which means he's going to be able to improve on that next year. That's success for me. 7-6 this year, 8-9 wins next year, we're off and running. We are a microwave society. I am guilty of it too. I understand it. Bill Belichick's going to need time, and the evaluation of whether or not he's good at this job or not is going to come under the most difficult thing in American culture to do today, and that's nuance. It's going to take some nuance to evaluate. You tell me, what is a successful UNC season? What makes Bill Belichick in year one not a failure? For me, it's, you know, don't win two games and look like you don't know how to coach, which is possible. But I think the standard is much lower for me of what success looks like for the University of North Carolina football program under Bill Belichick. You tell me your version. 888-710-4ISN. We'll also get a version from Ryan Hickey, DJ El Guapo. 888-710-4ISN. And after we do that, Jerry Jones will tell all of us why he is bad at his job. All that coming up next here on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
My nickname for Robert Kraft is Bobby Cakes.
Bobby Cakes.
Buy or sell that if we could get, which I probably could, get Bill Belichick on the show and told him that, he would laugh at Bobby Cakes.
Buy.
You think so?
He's a new person now. So I think anything is now on the table.
Buy or sell, he would first have to ask Jordan if he's allowed to laugh.
Buy. Okay.
You like a little whisper, like a little ruffle.
Yeah, okay.
That was really funny, Bill.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome. See, I'm guilty of it. Welcome back. I make jokes about Bill Belichick's personal life just because he's dating a super attractive 20-something-year-old. But honestly, I don't care. I care about the football. And by the way, you can date whoever you want and succeed at work. I mean, they're not actually correlated. There are only so many Yoko Onos out there. You know what I'm saying? That might have been unfair, but I don't think so. I wasn't around. I don't really know who broke up the Beatles. Mr. Ryan Hickey, good morning. Happy Friday. You could be bum of the week, and that's for the end of the show. You put out one of the worst tweets I've ever seen in my entire life, but I love that about you, and I love your energy. I just got it in there. Okay, subject change. That was really nice. Not even let you defend yourself.
Wow, good morning, Bill.
My point is, you're not afraid to say some crazy bleep, and I don't know if you think that bleep is real or not real, but I want you to give me an honest answer here. You don't have to hot take it up, right? You don't have to hot sauce it on there. You don't have to hot take sauce all over the take. But I'm curious. Good morning. That wasn't very nice, but it's true. Good morning.
Good morning.
What is success for UNC this year from your vantage point?
Can I give in two ways? I think, like, in terms of a number, I would say 6 wins. If we're talking about bowl eligibility for UNC,
okay,
no matter how they get there, boom, I think a massive success in year number one. But in terms of, like, because, look, I'll be honest, right? You gave some of the stats about the transfers. I have no idea. I don't think most people have any idea how good or bad this team is. So, like, once you actually watch the games, they may be the least talented team in the ACC or one of them. I don't know. So, if it's not, like, I'll say 6 wins just right now, not knowing anything. But with that, if this is a well-coached team, if Bill has a good pulse, if they are doing the small things that we used to see with a lot of these Patriots teams that would make or break it for them, usually win games, but they're just not talented enough to win them.
Dude, we're aligned.
Like, if he's 4-8, but, like, this team is actually competitive, they lose 7 close, you know, one score games, I'll say that's still a success.
So the game does pass people by. It does. And it can pass by a Bill Belichick. It can. And so I think that's the main standard for me. I'm 100% with you. I just want a little bit of success. A little bit of excellence. You don't have to, like, even I'm not gonna freak out if it's 4 wins and they're playing teams close and they're getting better. And when we get, you know, on October 4th, they are competitive for 3 quarters against Clemson before the talent differential kind of overwhelms them. And if they, you know, whatever, their schedule's not that hard. You know, they sneak out a win or two where they're underdogs at the end of the year because they're not very good, and they kind of get to 4 or 5 wins. I'm gonna need the context of how things look. And conversely, if they win some games and they get themselves to 6 or 7 wins, but they look like a disaster and there's drama and there's reports that that coordinators don't know what they're doing, or it's no offensive coordinator 2.0 or whatever, that's going to be a problem too. Because year one records, as we told you about with Deion and Saban and Brian Kelly and Kirby Smart and Jim Harbaugh and Pete Carroll, and Lincoln Riley on the other side of the equation, year one high profile future success coaches or future failed coaches, year one doesn't tell you. Or at least not without seeing it from a much wider vantage point. I want to get into Jerry. Oh, my God, Jerry. Jerry, stop. But I do need to do a quick name drop. This is the benefit of being a show from L.A.
Name drop.
So I bumped into another guy that I know who listened to the show, and he was asking, again, I mentioned that I saw a famous sports figure at church. and just decided not to say who it is because church is the one place where I kind of feel like, right? All right, I'm not going to do it. Another guy asked me who it was. I didn't tell him. He told me that for 3 weeks, Victor Wembanyama was living 6 blocks from my house. Now, by the way, somebody hit me up. It's like, I don't believe you're not super rich. I'm not. I live in a hovel. But I do live in a community of the very, very rich. I moved here because I liked the beach and the sushi place up the street, not realizing it was going to become the most expensive city in America. So me, my wife, my 2 kids, we live in a shoebox. But whatever, life's great. My point is, I digress. Victor Wembanyama, I didn't see him. He's gone. But he stands out. There aren't many people I would bother. But if I saw Michael Jordan, I would bother Michael Jordan. I don't care what he's doing. I would be the jerk. I would just, you're having dinner, you'd yell at me. He's scary. I would bother Tiger Woods. I just would. I think, is it okay to put Wembanyama on that list? Because where he lived, I drove by every day. And when this guy told me this, I realized, and this is a reflection on my personality flaw, that had I seen him walking in his front yard to get the newspaper or just on the sidewalk, I would have veered over in traffic, pulled into the side of the street, jumped in my car, and be like, hey, man, is that bad? You can tell me.
No, but let me ask you this before I answer that. What is your definition of bother? When you say you would bother these certain athletes, what does that mean?
I mean, I'm not going to give him a hug and ask if I can come in his house and be his best friend, but I'll probably go up, hey, dude, what's up? Welcome. What are you doing here? What are you doing here, dude?
So strike up a conversation. Would you ask for
a picture? How's it going?
Would you ask for a picture?
No.
Would you bring up? I think
I'd probably be like, hey, I cover the league. I cover the NBA. Not trying to get any information out of you, but big, like, how's it going? You optimistic about next year? I love what you guys are building in San Antonio. Do you want to be best friends?
Can I come over for dinner tonight? Actually, my son is playing basketball. Can you come over, give him a few tips?
From one tall guy to another.
Yeah. As you can see, he gets it from me. So your expertise would be great. I think that's fine. I think that's better than a lot of other people, you know, putting a camera in their face, trying to be TMZ 2.0, get a picture, whatever. I think that's the most normal interaction you could have.
Not a picture guy. Now, I will say this. You want a name drop? You want to get the name drop ready again? Here we go. You just hit it.
Name drop!
A few years ago, I was at an ice cream candy shop with my kids, and Vince Vaughn was behind us. And so I did pull an obnoxious, guys, let's do a selfie. And I got down and did a selfie. I don't think I've told this story on the air. And Vince was there with his kids. I don't want to bother him. Seems like a nice guy. I've mentioned on the air that I think Vince and I should be best friends. We're not yet. He lives around here somewhere, I guess. I see him sometimes. Anyway, I got the photo. I will never release this photo, Vince, because we're destined to be best friends. But I got, you know, I'm down low. I've got like an angle shooting up. I got my kids behind there. Yay! Vince is behind us. He had his zipper down. You know, sometimes you just have the old zipper down. You don't know what he tells you. This is what you got to tell the people. You got to tell your people. Hey, Bill, your zipper's down. Because what if somebody takes your photo and then later goes, oh, that's weird.
Did you ask Vince for a photo, or is this just family selfie time?
And so there's a big crowd of people, and there's an ice cream line. So I'm like, everybody, get down. So we're like doing the selfie, but then I kind of angled it so Vince was over our shoulders. So it was like a funny like family photo with Vince Vaughn in the background, right? But now I can't show people the photo because it feels like an invasion of privacy. Even telling the story feels like maybe a slight invasion of privacy.
I think you could share the photo with friends. I'm not saying send that to them, but like pull it up on your phone. You still have possession of it. So they just see it.
Is that your way of saying you want to see it when I'm there in about a month?
I would love to see it. I think it'd be funny. But I don't think putting out on social media would be fair. That's where I think crosses the line.
You think so?
I would say so.
Yeah, I agree.
I'll say this. There goes any hope of you and Vince becoming lifelong buddies.
And we're going to be lifelong buddies. It's going to happen.
So just don't tweet the picture out and it's going to happen.
Here's how close we came. I was at a place, like an outdoor sort of like hamburger stand. And I got a hamburger, and he was sitting there. I'm like, I don't want to bother him. And he kind of looked at me when I ordered the hamburger, and I thought, oh, okay, he can sense the universe is trying to bring us together, be best friends, right? But then I went and sat down at my table to eat. My buddy came over to me. He's like, what are you eating? I go, it's a hamburger. It's so good. He's like, oh, I'm gonna get one. He goes up, orders a hamburger, and Vince goes, hey man, are those hamburgers good? That should have been me. I was so close. So close.
That was the door opening to a lifelong
friendship.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So close. But also, at least you know he's social, so now he's got to find yourself around him more.
I hear he's a nice guy. Yeah.
Okay. eventually.
I hear he's a nice guy if you don't speak to him. I do think he's one of those guys that wants to be left alone, which I understand, you know?
And maybe he'll come up to you and befriend you because you're leaving him alone.
Because here's the thing. If he had been like, is the hamburger good? I would have gone, Vince, if you want to hang out, just say so.
You want to come over for dinner later? Buddy, please.
Do you want to be best friends? All right. You know who I don't want to be best friends with at all? Jerry Jones. Because he keeps telling us that this guy is a hot mess. I was going to do this in this segment, but we got distracted by name drop and by Ryan's tweet that I haven't even mentioned yet, but that is percolating in the background. Dude, that was a bad take. Just tell the people.
Oh, no. The tweet was this. I am more excited for LSU Clemson next Saturday night than I am Ohio State Texas.
No, that's not true for anybody.
Oh,
that's such
true.
A thirsty tweet.
Well, so this is
pay attention to it.
I would agree with you that a lot of people don't feel that way, which is why I put it out there, because now it makes you think. Because everyone's always conditioned. Ohio State,
it
Texas.
It makes you think you're full of crap.
With Brian Kelly and his opening season woes and Dabo trying to get the team, like, that's one where the loser's season could spiral. Whoever loses Texas, Ohio State, they're probably still going to make the playoff.
Dude, Arch alone makes that a bigger draw for everyone, including you. I don't believe you.
Ass handed to him.
Yeah,
at
I can't
Clemson,
wait.
That we could be talking about an 8-4 year, just the downfall of LSU, or reverse. Everyone's buying into Clemson this year.
And if Arch throws 3 interceptions and Ohio State wins by 28, then the sky is falling on the Manning dynasty of great. I mean, come on.
No,
I don't
saying,
even want. You know what? I don't want to have
the
conversation.
Bigger storyline on Monday will be selling from
LSU
Clemson.
I know what you're doing. We all know what you're doing.
I think that game will generate. I'm going to watch. I'm excited. I think the fallout, the storylines from LSU Clemson to me are much more intriguing, because it could be an extreme fall for the loser depending on how the game goes.
People telling themselves, Ryan just did it and Jerry Jones is doing it. And we're going to move on from one version of that to another. We'll listen to Jerry do it after a sports flash from Chris Lopresti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Well, Bill, going to give a little taste here. It was a busy day for Jerry as he joined Michael Irvin's YouTube show talking Micah Parsons with no apparent progress in contract talks. And the clock ticking towards the Cowboys season opener just under 2 weeks away now.
Nobody appreciates Micah Parsons more than the Cowboys or me. Nobody. Nobody has ever offered him more money than I have to play football. Period.
And Jerry said that he and Parsons apparently hammered down the financial framework of an extension when they met back in March, but then...
When we wanted to send the details to the agent told us to stick it up our ass.
And here we are, some 5 months later with no resolution. Parsons unfollowing the Cowboys on social media platforms Thursday, latest move on his part to illustrate his unhappiness with the whole situation. Baseball. Catcher Samuel Basayo and the Orioles are reportedly finalizing an 8-year, $67 million extension, locking up one of baseball's top prospects less than a week after he made his big league debut and just 9 days after Basayo turned 21 years of age. Golf second round action tour championship from East Lake. Russell Henley has the lead 9-under par. That was from round number one. He is set to tee off in just a couple of minutes. Scottie Scheffler 2 shots back. I'm Chris Lopresti.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
Oh, Bill, great show, man. And I'd never heard of you before, and I'm a mailman here in Kentucky. I gave the show a shot, and I really like your format. I think Ryan does a great job for you, so I just want to start off by giving you props, man.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
By the way, Ryan does do a great job, even if I must occasionally point out that some of his takes are flavorful.
I like flavorful.
Sure. What is your go-to hot sauce?
This is going to surprise you.
Okay.
Nothing.
Oh, come on, man. Tabasco. Love it.
I don't like the spice.
On everything.
How about, okay. Everything.
So when I get a pizza, my mouth is watering thinking about this. The next day I'll eat it for breakfast, but I'll splash it with Tabasco. Cold pizza, Tabasco, breakfast.
That's crazy.
It's amazing.
That wake you up? Do you even need coffee after that?
Here's another... It does wake me up. Here's another cheat code. Okay? Dip your grilled cheese in ketchup. One of the best things you'll ever eat.
Better than soup.
Just in general?
Like, I'm saying, if you had to... What's better, grilled cheese dipped in soup or grilled cheese dipped in ketchup?
They meant better than having a cup of soup. I mean, I like soup. A lot of soups out there.
Usually that pairs.
No, ketchup.
Grilled cheese, usually.
No, ketchup.
Wow. That's a hot take.
It's almost like you're taking a condensed cheese French fry and dipping it in ketchup. It's amazing. It's a game changer. All right? It's as good and surprising a food item as Jerry Jones is bad and surprising a football steward. It's another day, and we got to talk about Jerry just getting in the way. I mean, what the holy hell? So let me just back you up here. If you remember this, a while back, and jump in, Ryan, if you remember the details, because I actually went through my notebook, my little notebook of what we talk every day. Every day I write, Jerry's awful. Jerry's not good at his job. Jerry does it again, just day after day after day after day. Over the course of this Micah Parsons saga, whether or not pay the best or one of the best defensive players in football what he is worth, there was a point where a report, I think it was Schefter, but a report came out that indicated that one of the cruxes of the issue, because Jerry Jones and Parsons' agent and Parsons aren't even speaking. We played you Diana Russini yesterday saying they're not even, you can't find common ground in a negotiation if you're not speaking to each other. And one of the sort of nuances here, one of the important nuances, was there was a private conversation going back to the spring, maybe it was March, between Jerry and Micah, where there was a disagreement about the degree to which that was a binding negotiation or a conversation. And the reporting was that Jerry Jones' camp, felt like we agreed to something. I talked to Micah without his agent there, which is a big no-no, by the way, and that's the deal. And then the sort of counterpoint was the, I think, more reasonable view of Micah Parsons going, well, it's my boss or it's the owner and you got to be polite and maybe we had a conversation, but the actual negotiation happens with the agent. The reason people hire agents, Micah Parsons' agent doesn't work for free. He doesn't do it for Skittles, okay? He makes a lot of money, and to earn that money, his job is to be the bad guy for Micah Parsons. That's how it works. That's the deal. And I remember when the report came out, I said, okay, like, if this report's true, Jerry's probably the one who's culpable because that only an idiot would think they could go to a player and negotiate without their agent and then hold them hostage. We agreed, and not saying that Jerry's an idiot, but he has done things that look idiotic from the outside looking in. Well, fast forward to today, because this is important. This is on the Michael Irvin YouTube channel. Jerry admits, this is the important context here, is what he's about to describe as his proof that he's the good guy is actually Jerry admitting that this past report was accurate, that the Cowboys are at fault, because the owner of the Cowboys here, talking as if he had a deal, doesn't hold water, because you're not supposed to negotiate with the players. You're supposed to negotiate with their agent.
When we wanted to send the details to the agent told us to stick it up our ass. Mike and I talked, and then we were going to send it over to the agent. And we had our agreements on term, amount, guarantees, everything. We were going to send it over to the agent. And the agent said, don't bother because we've got all that to negotiate. And so the issue, very frankly, is we've had the negotiation in my mind. And the agent's trying to get his nose in it right now and try to come in there and improve off the mark that we'd already set. And we've got it done. And if the agent wants to finish up the detail, which is should, and do all the paperwork, and he can do that, and we're ready to go. But as far as the amount of money, the years, the guarantees, all of that, we negotiate that.
Jerry knows, or Jerry should know, that an agent's not a lawyer who dots I's and crosses T's, which is what he's representing. This would be like a quarterback deciding what the offensive plan's going to be against an upcoming defense and then informing the offensive coordinator, here's what we're doing. Sign off. That's not the job. Now, there's a give and a take. It depends on the quarterback. It depends on the client. It depends on the coordinator. It depends on the agent, right? Some have more power than others. Maybe it's 70-30 or 30-70 in terms of who's doing the push and who's doing the pull. But that's a group effort. You don't dictate terms to a player or even... And by the way, I don't believe Micah Parsons said to Jerry Jones, I'll take this and this and this. By the way, he may have. And he may have said, but I need more guaranteed money. And Jerry may have said, oh, we'll get to it. I don't believe Jerry Jones. I don't believe that Micah Parsons said, here's A, B, C, D, E, F, and G, and I'll do all of them. And I totally agree. And this is a resolute, absolute binding agreement. And this is a negotiation. And you tell the agent. Here's the other reason this doesn't make sense. if Micah Parsons decided to cut off his nose to spite his face, to negotiate with Jerry on his own, even though he has an agent who can do it for him, Micah Parsons would call his agent, I've had an agent, and say, this is the deal I agreed to, do it. He wouldn't say, Jerry, let's do this. Can you let my agent know? That's not how it works. And it sounds personal because Jerry Jones wasn't done basically expressing accidentally his incompetence while talking about his frustration.
I have agreed to give more money than has ever been given in terms of guaranteed money than anyone ever has as far as a defensive player. I've done that. Now, Mike has got 3 years with the Cowboys left. At some point, somebody has to have the say over the other. My job is managing the check. Micah's got to do the playing. Where's the least important part of this whole equation we're talking about? What is the least incremental part of the whole equation? The attorney or the agent? Okay. He works for Micah. Okay. He's not the principal here in any way.
Do you see what he did there? He called him the attorney. That's a different thing. I've had agents in this business that I work in, and I fired agents, and I've just had an attorney do it for me. And when the agent does it, he does it. And when I do it myself, I pay an attorney. And in both cases, I make $12 an hour. But the point is, it's a different situation, agent versus attorney. I know it's in the weeds here, but because you don't know, and I don't necessarily know. Jerry knows what he's doing. Jerry's being, I think, disingenuous at best. I'm not going to play you the whole thing. It's worth listening to. But he gets into a hole. He's pulling the mom and the dad where you go to mommy. And I think he says mommy. And mama says no. But daddy says yeah. And you go back to mommy. We're not going to play the mommy daddy. And here's the deal, man. It ain't mommy daddy. It's agent, multi-million dollar, elite athlete. Maybe Micah likes you. Maybe Micah's not good at confrontation. Maybe Micah Parsons is really good at tackling quarterbacks, but not good at negotiating with billion-dollar oil men who have done this their entire lives. That's why he has an agent. That's why he has an agent. And Jerry might also just be used to having conversations and thinking that because some of those conversations, some of which don't involve numbers, end well, that now he's a master, he can cut out an agent. So Dak Prescott, and Dak's not going against Micah Parsons here, but Dak Prescott did talk about the fact that when he got his deal done, which remember was, I don't know if it was acrimonious, but it was difficult and it was last minute, that he did have a side conversation with Jerry Jones.
Never engaged in numbers, but there was a lot of engagement, especially on this last one. The first one, maybe not so much of anything, but this last one, yeah, there was definitely some talks, definitely different talks, particularly with Steven, and they were great talks. They were phenomenal talks. Honestly, don't know if I do resign if we don't have those conversations.
The last part's interesting, but it's not the important part. The first part is the important part. Never engaged in numbers. Never engaged in numbers. And by the way, Dak went on to basically, you know, I think as much as he doesn't want to get involved between his owner and one of his teammates, this to me sounds like he's back in Micah Parsons.
You know, I think you should trust your representation, and that's what they're there for. Simple as that, and don't want to talk about somebody else's situation, but I just think you do. You have to trust your representation, and I think 11's doing that.
I mentioned that I know socially, like I've gotten to know really well, an agent who is an agent for a bunch of college and NFL coaches, and I like the guy, Fickell's agent. I like the guy a lot, and I feel like I know him pretty well. And by the way, I know that a lot of agents are liars. Trust me, I got it. A lot of them are. This guy is moral. He cares about his clients. He's charming. He's funny. He's a great guy. Great guy. Many of the athletic directors I know and GMs who have dealt with him hate him with a burning passion. And I know some of those guys. And they're good guys. An agent's job is not to be liked. If you are accused of a crime and you are falsely accused, your attorney's job, your defense attorney's job, is not to be liked by the prosecution. And you're probably not going to like the prosecutor. Doesn't mean he's a bad guy. So this whole Jerry taking it personally, intentionally or out of ignorance or arrogance, misunderstands the role here. The agent negotiates the deal. Anyway, I made the point. Here's what it means. It means Jerry Jones has lost the plot. It means that through whatever, he's not good at his job anymore because he's arrogant, or he's not good at his job anymore because he's lost the ability to understand how this works, or he's not good at his job anymore because he's so rich he's just tired of dealing with other people. I don't know. Doesn't matter. That's why the Cowboys are a disaster. This organization couldn't win when Jerry Jones wasn't making these kind of mistakes. You think the Cowboys, who can't succeed over the last two decades, are going to be okay over the next two or three or four years, where Jerry Jones doesn't even understand what an agent does or is unwilling to recognize what an agent does? For his most important, at least defensive player, maybe the best player on the football team? And by the way, I understand the difficulties of whether to pay Dak or not. The same thing with Kyler Murray. I didn't think they were ever going to win with Dak Prescott, and I could be wrong. But the guy that had to make that really tough decision, do I pay Dak or not pay Dak, was Jerry Jones, who was having private personal conversations with the guy. Jerry's taking everything too personally. And I've watched The Godfather enough that I feel like I'm an expert on top-tier negotiation. It's not ever supposed to be personal. It's always supposed to be business. And Jerry does that backwards, at least when it comes to football. And that's why his football team is mediocre, why they don't win. I know they make money. I know he's a good business person. He's not a good football person. Because you know what he's operating as here in this situation with Micah Parsons? He's not operating like a businessman. He's a great businessman. He's very rich. He's operating like a pissed-off fantasy owner who doesn't like one of the guys in his league and is just going to mess everything. He's acting like a baby. He's acting like an emotional fan. He's acting like an amateur. And whatever. He owns the Cowboys. He wants to treat it like his shiny toy that he can throw around the room because he's having a tantrum. Fine. You're going to break the toy. You're going to damage the toy. The problem is this toy, the Dallas Cowboys, is in theory something that brings a lot of joy and hope and happiness to other people. They do. I know it's a money-making device. I get it. Why does it make money? Because people love these teams. They're obsessed with these teams. Why do I make fun of Ryan Hickey's Penn State program? Because I am mean, and he actually loves that program. Why do I hate the Chicago Bears? Because I actually love them. They're right next to each other on the emotional dial. Jerry's messing around with something that may be his in technically, but it belongs to the entire, not just city of Dallas, not just the Metroplex. That's a regional football team that is beloved. That's a national football team. And what Jerry's telling us again and again and again, and out loud here, is I don't care about the Dallas Cowboys. I don't care about winning. I don't care about you, the fans. I care about my fragile, money-fueled, my-way-or-the-highway ego. And you know what that leads to? It leads to the same failure we've seen year after year, decade after decade. Cowboys are not winning anything. However long Jerry Jones is in charge of this team, in the way, in the manner that he's handled this Micah Parsons thing. It's a bad situation for Parsons, but it tells you everything you got to know about the Dallas Cowboys. They're run by a guy that isn't going to win. That ain't changing anytime soon. And we have years of evidence that's the case. All right, 888-710-4ISN. The SEC added an extra conference game. We'll get to that later. I need a longer show. 888-710-4ISN. I had to look at my piece of paper. I'm so mad at Jerry Jones. David Sampson's going to be on the show. Love that guy. We're going to ask about Jerry. We're going to ask about some baseball stuff. We'll get into an executive's vantage point on the biggest story in sports next year. I'm Ryder Than You.
You're listening to the Ryder Than You podcast.
Good morning. Happy Friday. Your day's about to get better because we have one of the, one of the biggest and best voices and one of the most candid and smart voices in sports media on right now. And I love that combination. Smart and honest is pretty rare. Especially the honest part. But David Sampson does not pull his punches and brings his incredible experience every time he does the many myriad ways that he is affecting sports media. The main one, the one you should actually check out, he's the host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson. It's outstanding. Also CBS Sports HQ MLB analyst. He was the president of the Miami Marlins for a very long time, including a World Series run. He is on social media, X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it, David P. Sampson. Mr. Sampson, hope you're having a good summer, buddy. Good morning.
Good morning to you. All is well on my end. And if Labor Day is upon us, that means October is soon behind. And boy, is it going to be a great run to the playoffs in baseball.
I have loved this baseball season. And look, I'm a Cubs fan, right? So I guess not in theory, that's a major market, even if my Cubs have not won a lot of World Series over time. But I like whatever purposeful or accidental sort of parity we have, David, and that there are 15 to 18 teams at any given time who are playing relatively meaningful baseball. Is this the new reality in the sport? Or are we going to have a game where you're going to have two-thirds of Major League Baseball being in, you know, imaginary spitting distance of a playoff spot?
Boy, I hope so. I think that's always the goal. And certainly if playoffs expand again with the next collective bargaining agreement, you want as many teams as possible to have a chance at the ring. But before we go any further, I have to ask, as a Cubs fan, are you booing Kyle Tucker? Is that you?
No. I would never boo the guy even when he's struggling without the right information. And knowing that the guy tried to play through some pain, like I wish he had not. No, I'm not a boo. Like I would boo Moises Alou back in the day. Like, leave the fans alone. I would boo, this isn't popular, Dusty Baker for shredding some arms. But I'm generally very supportive.
Boy, did
of
he
my
ever?
Cubbies. He did. Didn't
you know that I have a World Series ring because he shredded arms so badly?
Do you know that I have PTSD because I was at that Bartman game on Wave when I couldn't get a ticket or afford one? And it basically, one of the greatest moments of your life, David, is literally one of the worst of mine.
Isn't that how it's supposed to be? Because everything evens out like that. It's the yin and the yang. But I love the fact, and it's not just this year, but previous years, small payroll teams are making it to the playoffs now. The fact that the Twins can't advance in the playoffs, or the Guardians or the Brewers, all those things, or the Orioles, all of that may be true. But 2 years ago, we had Texas and Arizona in the World Series, for crying out loud. So it's great when teams have a shot. And what's interesting about more teams having the ability to play in October, it really does change how you build your roster in the offseason and how you have to maintain some budget to add at the deadline. And then when you have to be realistic about what your chances are as you move forward. So, for example, a team like Baltimore, big news today, they extended a prospect, their catcher, a top prospect. They gave him he's been in the big leagues, I think, for 7 minutes, and they gave him an 8-year deal. And that means that Adley Rutschman is going to be gone from the Orioles. And that's big, because you'd think that he was the part of a core that could get Baltimore back to the World Series. But the way you have to build a team with a mid to small market payroll is you've got to churn. And I know that people don't think that's popular and they get upset about it. But you can't keep everybody. You have to keep the pipeline full. You have to keep promoting people from your system and then choosing who will be sort of the centerpieces, and watching teams and front offices decide who their centerpieces are. That's really the happiness of you as a fan and whether or not your team wins a World Series.
I mean, to your exact point, and some of the replacements I'm going to mention, of the guys I'm going to mention, David Sampson, were big time free agents or guys who were brought in. But I'm in L.A. I'm not a Dodgers fan, but I'm a fan of the organization. I think they're just really well-run. I think Friedman's really impressive, and I used to do a lot of baseball coverage back in my radio days locally. I mean, Corey Seager and Cody Bellinger, I thought, were going to be here forever. I've never seen a swing sweeter than Seager's. I'm a lefty, so I kind of related to him at the plate. They're gone, and the Dodgers are just fine. I had a nice little swing, David. I should have had just count me in 94.
I'm picturing Ken Griffey Jr. when you say a nice little swing, and I'm then picturing that you and I are in media and not on the baseball field. So I'm questioning, Bill, whether your swing was actually that sweet.
Well, it was not as sweet as I thought it was, because here I am, David Sampson, here on the show. One of my shortcomings, I think, especially with baseball, is my imagination, because I do love tradition, and I am old school, and I'm one of these silly people who hate the DH in the National League. But I'll admit that the commissioner, in some of the things that he's done, they've been bold and they've been successful. And all of that to say this: how would you frame, how do you think people like me should think about this idea, this sort of maybe investigation into geographic realignment and whether that would be good for the sport?
Well, Bill, we've been talking about that for a decade. I was in a committee where we did the geographical realignment, and we had 8 divisions of 4 with the 31st and a 32nd team, adding one on the East Coast and one on the West Coast. And it just changes the schedule. Jason Stark wrote a great article in The Athletic explaining how 162 games is going to change very likely, and you're going to see a shorter season, whether it's 154 or 156. And it's all about progress. It's all about giving the customer what they want. And what we've learned is that while leagues try to make the regular season as important as possible, which they do, the reality is that postseason is where it's at. That's where the money is. That's where the passion is. That's where broadcasters, they want content during the course of a season, for sure. They're willing to pay money for regular season, but they pay a premium for postseason. And so geographic realignment and then expanded playoffs and then a shortened regular season. It just, all of it makes sense. But we're a ways away because they've got to figure out Tampa. It's got to get sold. It's got to get approved. Then they got to get a ballpark. You got to get that ballpark built in Vegas, which is starting to be built, apparently. And so once those are situations are taken care of, then you'll get the old committee, Bill. That's when they get a bunch of owners together, and they call it the expansion committee, which is a committee that will explore the possibility of expansion. That's code. The code is, let's find a city and an ownership group who's willing to pay multi-billions of dollars in an expansion fee and do a publicly financed stadium in a particular city. So that's what the committee really does. And so again, you're seeing that process in the NBA. You're seeing that process when you think about the NFL. Roger Goodell talks about Europe and the possibility of a team or maybe a division. Now maybe it's a Super Bowl. Every league is always looking to expand and find more inventory to raise more money.
Talking to David Sampson here on the show, the host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson, longtime, I think 16-year president of the Miami Marlins. David, I think I've asked you about this before, but I want to bring it up again. I am curious what you think the likelihood, however limited, and the benefits or lack thereof of a cap and a floor, if that could be possible in a next collective bargaining agreement for baseball in terms of spending.
I think it's really important for the commissioner's office and the owners to let the players know that they're serious about a salary cap, because they don't want teams like the Dodgers or the Mets just to even create greater disparity between top and bottom payroll. But there's a real problem internally before you even negotiate with the players. There's a real problem on how to get certain teams up to the floor, because teams like the Marlins or the Rays or the Guardians or even the Athletics, they just are not at that floor. And when you have a salary cap, definitionally you have a salary floor. And people always just focus on the cap. But the real focus of the owners, and it should be the focus of the players, is the floor. Because if the floor is high, let's say 100, 110 million, there are teams who are under that by a lot, and they don't have the money to get to that floor. And if you can't get to a floor, then you're never going to get a cap. Which is why I believe that this is really part of negotiation. And at the end, there won't be a salary cap or a salary floor, but it will be argued about and fought over for a long time, creating a work stoppage. And the question is, how quickly will baseball give up on that? And how quickly will the players then give something to management in order for them to give up the salary cap and the salary floor?
David Sampson, I want to end here sort of leaning into your expertise. It's technically an NFL topic, but I think it's just a management of professional sports teams topics, which is, you are the preeminent expert of that in the country and in sports media, and certainly anyone we have access to. Jerry Jones is having a negotiation issue in the Cowboys with Micah Parsons, and what's come out, what we know, and I know, right, is that Jerry had a private conversation with one of his star players in Parsons. He believes they had an agreement. The agent of Micah Parsons basically said, hell no. The sort of details are more or less agreed upon. I would have been under the impression that it's understood if you're the president of a baseball team or the GM of a baseball team or the owner of a baseball team playing at those roles, that you know that you have to include the agent. Is that not an unwritten rule? Am I missing something, or is Jerry Jones missing something here?
Jerry Jones is just misleading everybody. I talked about it on Today's Nothing Personal. It's total horse hockey. He, on one hand, said, oh, I don't even know who Micah Parsons' agent is. Well, of course he does. He said, you know, the agent and the attorney don't matter. It's just about the player. Well, the fact is the player does have the final say. And the truth is, with players who are represented by Scott Boras, as an example, we would always send an offer both to Boras and to the player to make sure that Boras gave the offer to the player, because there were instances where we thought he wasn't doing that. But in general, agents are really there as obviously to fight for the player, for all that the player's worth, to make sure that the contractual language is acceptable by the player and the union. So they're critical. It's like saying you can buy and sell a company without an attorney. You just can't. You have to have attorneys who are looking at all clauses in a contract. Jerry Jones deals with agents all the time. He's the GM of the team, for crying out loud. He can't say he doesn't deal with agents. He'd be lying to you. Every GM deals with agents. Every president deals with agents, and you have to. Now, does it mean you can't meet and talk to your player? Of course not. But a player is the one who has the ultimate say, but no player agrees to a deal without the agent knowing about it in advance. It's just not accurate. And I think Jerry is just he's trying to prove his power. He's trying to prove that he's in charge and in control. But what he's proven over time is when players like Lamb or Dak, when they fight with him, they wait, and they get paid. And Jerry gets a new cycle or seven out of it and then pays. And I assume that's what will happen with Parsons.
David Sampson, you're the best man. Appreciate you. Loving the show. Nothing personal with David Sampson. Congrats on the recent extension there. Well-deserved. And thanks for, on a busy time on a Friday, making time for us.
Appreciate you. Have a great day and a great weekend. Thank you.
Thanks, dude. You too. David Sampson on the show. Current host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson. CBS Sports HQ MLB analyst. Was president of the Marlins for a very long time. Won that damn World Series in 2003 when my sports heart got ripped from my chest. David P. Sampson on the old social media. Don't like how much Ryan. See, if you think I'm mean to Ryan, right? If you think I'm a little hard on Ryan, you don't see his joy when I bring up my suffering. He does it subtle like, but I can see it because we're on Skype. I may be in LA and he may be in New York, but the mean spiritedness it travels through the airwaves. Yeah, mean spiritedness.
I have Ryan. No idea what you're talking about. I would never take joy in your misery. Who do you think I am?
A Penn State fan. Let's do a little buy or sell. We're going to get into the SEC's big change here, among other topics, next on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
I had this moment last night where I thought it was Friday night last night, and I thought, made it to another Friday, going to have a couple extra drinks. Take the kids somewhere tomorrow, sleep in. Lasted about 15 beautiful seconds. But the upside of it being Tuesday and not Saturday is that it's great to be here again with you.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back into the show. By the way, sometimes you take risks in life. You decided to remake this song. Is that it's a different beat underneath, right?
A little this more is upbeat for a Friday.
I like it. I didn't know if this is the musical version of dipping your grilled cheese in ketchup. Take a chance. Find something magical you didn't expect.
Would you say it's equivalent? The music equivalent?
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
100%. I mean, do you really think the first time some genius decided, what the hell, I'm going to take the chocolate and take the peanut butter and just see what they taste like together. You think they knew it was going to work? No.
Only one way to find out.
I'm sure somebody tried it once with mayonnaise and ketchup. Right? Oh, that one doesn't work. Thought it would. Oops.
I thought you were going to say mayonnaise and chocolate.
Ugh.
That's how I was like, ooh. That's
mayonnaise is so gross, except when it's not gross. Turkey sandwich, BLT requirement. Anything else? No. Hell no.
Do you make your grilled cheese with a thin layer of mayo?
Hell no.
I don't make it this way. A friend I know makes it this way. It's not bad.
You don't like lemons, though. You don't like hot sauce. You don't like sugar.
I love sugar. I will say this. I'm not a mayo person at all. I fought like hell to even make sure this mayo is not put on the grilled cheese. A thin slice to kind of toast the bread. It's all said and done. I ate it. It was pretty good.
It was pretty good. Okay.
It was pretty good.
I take it. What if I snuck some lemon in your pasta?
I would tell immediately and throw it out.
You would?
That's no good for me. No bueno.
Did you get attacked by a lemon tree when you were younger?
It's sour. It's like,
it's
refreshing. I don't want zest in my life. I don't.
I don't want zest.
I like plain water. There's nothing wrong with that.
I'm just saying lemon has lots of functions beyond being in the water. You can not have it in the water, but have it other places.
I've had lemon pasta. We were at Trader Joe's one time, and this woman passed by.
This.
She goes, oh, this lemon sauce is delicious. You have to have it. I said, okay. Tried it once, had one bite, threw the entire thing out.
Didn't like it.
Didn't like it. And it was not going to suffer through eating the whole meal.
Okay, we get to move on from the... I just find it very strange how you're very angry and animated about being against lemons. They're lemons.
I know, and they're not for me.
You know what's for you and for all of America? Buy or sell.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
Bill, you tease it. Let's start with a lot of news happening yesterday and into today. One of the big ones, the SEC is officially changing their college football schedule model starting in 2026.
Okay.
They'll now play nine conference games, matching the Big Ten, matching also the Big 12. They will have three permanent opponents every year, and then the other six opponents will rotate once that schedule takes place next season. Also, what they announced and mandated, that every single SEC school has to play at least one non-conference game against an opponent from the Big Ten, the ACC, the Big 12, or Notre Dame. Buy or sell, this non-conference mandate is a bigger deal than going to a nine-game conference schedule.
That is a great question. Let me add one piece of context that'll help sort of lead my decision, guide my answer here. They're also saying they're going to recalibrate basically a strength of schedule component where playing wins against good opponents will be count for more and losses against good opponents will not hurt you as much. So if you're Texas, it's not going to be a big problem if you lose to Ohio State, even less so than before, they claim.
Can I ask you a stupid question?
Yeah.
Shouldn't that have been the case?
Yes, 100%.
Were you under the impression they were doing that anyway?
Yes.
Because I was.
Also don't believe them. It's basically vibes. We're going to vibe it even more so than before.
Wait, what do you mean now you're not going to penalize a team for losing a close game against a great opponent? What do you mean you're going to weigh beating the number one team more than you would beating Akron? What?
That's why I'm going to sell that the non-conference games are more important.
Sell.
Because in related news, buy or sell, you agree with me, the athletic director of Purdue woke up today to a lot of voicemail messages.
Buy.
Hey, Johnny, athletic director. How you been? It's your guy over here at Alabama, at Auburn, at Texas, at Missouri, at LSU. Well, what are you doing in 2026? You want to hang out in Tuscaloosa? Cool, call me. Call me. I mean, you can schedule. You got to work at it a little bit, but you can schedule some pretty easy games in this mix.
Wake Forest probably getting a lot of calls. Stanford's not looking very good right now. They're probably getting a lot of calls.
By the way, it's hard to keep up with everything, right, as a storyline that prevails. Buy or sell that Stanford's demise over the last, I guess, 10 or 15 years is one of the most under-talked about stories in college football.
Buy.
I need to start putting them on that list when I talk about how you can lose the plot and then it goes away forever. Because I've done that in the context of USC. Stanford was a juggernaut under Harbaugh. And to a degree, his predecessor, kind of.
It's going to be interesting to see, too, with Andrew Luck kind of taking over the program now, where it goes, if he could help it out.
Not optimistic. Good luck.
It's tough. But you are right. I mean, they were a mainstay 10-win team for a decade, really. Like, once of at USC, Pete Carroll went down, they rose up.
If there had been a college football playoff, then they would have been in the college football playoff basically all the time, or at least in competition for it every single season. Buy or sell, it's okay to start making when will Andrew Luck randomly quit his athletic director job jokes.
Buy.
Yeah. I like Andrew Luck, too. But
you're a creative guy.
That was a crazy day. That was a crazy day.
That was wild. Only time the earth ever felt like it stopped moving for a second.
I was doing the Jim Rome show that day.
Nuts.
Yeah.
You could imagine the amount of texts I got, by the way.
I think I sent you one.
A lot of people came out of the woodwork. I haven't talked to in years. Former high school
I think
friends.
I sent you a nice one.
If you did, you're one of the few. I'll say
I'm
that.
I'm sorry. Dude, I'm sorry. You don't have to give a joke. The joke is your life in that moment. So your football fandom is the joke. So sorry, man. Thinking of you.
That
people were obnoxious, huh?
Oh, so many people. So many. I mean, to be fair, I would probably do the same thing if roles were reversed. And, I knew a Patriots fan, and all of a sudden one day Tom Brady in, 2012 woke up and said, I'm out of here. I would be nice. Oh, I'm so sorry. Ah, shoot. The best quarterback of all time is now no longer.
Other than Barry Sanders, I cannot think of in the history of football, a comparable situation.
I mean, if anything, right, we talk about it the other way, where players hang on too long.
100%. See Aaron Rodgers this year.
Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre. I mean, Brett Favre, you could argue. Aaron, a lot of guys playing too long. Not many hanging up too short, unfortunately. Well, I guess fortunately. That's good for us, right? This is maybe good for Matt Rhule. I don't know. We'll see. Okay. The Nebraska head coach, Bill, yesterday announced he is starting his own podcast. Nice name. House Rules. Quick buy or sell House Rules?
Buy the name. It's a good name.
He plans on this.
Why not just go with Matt Rhules?
Ooh. Okay.
Buy.
I like that. That could work as well. For the podcast, he plans on speaking the truth about everything. The program, mental health, faith, life, etc. Buy or sell. This podcast will do more harm than good.
Well, let me just sell that I think he's going to tell the truth.
Sell.
That's Matt's rule number one. You don't do that.
Can you release a podcast where you don't say you're going to tell the truth? I'm unfiltered now, baby. Like, I finally know. Right.
Here we go.
Held back.
Filtered podcast. Totally going to lie to you. This will be drivel. More harm than good. Sell, because I think it's going to be it's going to be a great big nothing burger.
Let me phrase it this way. I'm not even talking about maybe a little bit what he says can get himself in trouble, but also, like, if you are 4-4, if you're losing some big games, it's almost like it's not even what you're saying, but it's, here's another podcast. As the team is struggling, people get upset even if it's a good conversation.
Yeah, you lose to Iowa to go 3-4. I don't need to be hear you talking on Monday about how you like lemon pasta.
And exactly,
the wife
right.
Had a really, we had a nice little wine. You know, it was great. We just bought a boat. Can't wait to take it out. No, man, don't want to hear about it.
Hey, Coach, I just spent the bye week. We're on the boat. Got away with the family. People are gonna love that, Coach. You're 2-5. Yeah, we have to get away.
Yeah. Anyway, get back to the boat.
Enough football schematics. Anyway. I got this new pontoon. College football, Bill, officially kicks off tomorrow in Ireland. We get a top 25 matchup out of the Big 12. Number 22, Iowa State, takes on number 17, Kansas State, out there in Dublin. For the record, Wildcats are 3-point favorites in this one. Buy or sell, you are fine with a conference game happening overseas.
I mean, sell. I'm not fine with
sell.
It. I think it's silly. I'm a proponent. I'm into some of these leagues that want to expand abroad. I understand why the NFL or the NBA or baseball want to break into other markets. But the NFL is not a guarantee to be successful in Europe. What are we doing sending, no offense to these programs? You know what? Take offense. It's fine. Random programs over there. I know they're top 25 programs, but are the people of County Cork, where my mother's people came from, chomping at the bit to watch the Iowa State Cyclones do their thing? No. They're going to be more inclined to say, wait, are there Cyclones in Iowa? That's what that conversation is going to be about. I don't get it.
Something funny on that. I saw a picture of a bar going viral yesterday. So they had like flags out because I'm assuming they're trying to attract all the fans that are going to the game into their bar. So outside the bar, they had flags for Iowa State. And they also had the Kansas, like the actual state flag of Kansas. They must have typed in Kansas State flag, not knowing what
what's happening.
Like. And it's the actual Kansas State flag instead of the university flag, which highlights, to your point, who knows about these programs over in Ireland and who cares?
They don't know.
Imagine a bar like in LA was like trying to attract Barcelona fans and somehow like they have just a Spanish flag out instead of like the Barcelona flag.
In fairness, it would be the Catalan flag, but I take your drift.
My apologies for my ignorance, but thank you for leading me in the right direction.
People get real mad about, yeah. People of Barcelona don't consider themselves to be in Spain. It's a whole thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a whole.
Did not know that. Yeah. How about this, Bill? So we talked a little bit about Bill Belichick and his expectations to start the show. Well, it seems like he took another shot and his owner, Robert Kraft. So he was speaking at the Boston Globe this week, and I want to read you this quote that he said about the difference between college football and the NFL when it comes to the power structure. Bill Belichick says, quote, there's no owner. There's no owner's son. There's no cap. Everything that goes with the marketing and everything else, which I'm all for that. I'd say when we had our best years in New England, we had fewer people and more of a direct vision. And as that expanded, it became harder to be successful. Buy or sell, now that there's no owner and Kraft family and owner's son in his ear, Bill Belichick and UNC this year will go over their 7.5 projected win total.
I don't know. And as I said at the start of the show, I think assessing success there is going to be more complicated, but I'll sell. I think maybe not. I think it's going to be a little bit rougher landing, as it has been with some of the other coaches we mentioned. I will buy, though, that Bobby Cakes might have been the actual problem.
Bye.
Bobby Cakes being our very loving moniker for Robert Kraft. Man, he's just zero bleeps given by Bill Belichick.
That's unfiltered right there.
It is unfiltered. I like it, too.
This could be unfiltered too, Bill. So last week we talked about, or I guess really early this week. Yeah, early this week. Time blends together. Dylan Gabriel went viral for an out-of-context quote in which he talked about entertainers versus competitors. A lot of people thought it was about Shador Sanders. Until listening to the question, it's kind of more talking about the media and the athletes. Well, yesterday, Shador Sanders met with the media, and someone asked him, did you believe Dylan Gabriel when he said his comment was not about him? Here's Shador's answer.
Did I believe him?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like you're trying to start stuff now. I feel like you're trying to start stuff. I mean, he's doing his job. He's supposed to. Do I feel like he did? I don't know. And that's not on me to sit here and be like, oh, he did, he didn't. That's not going to change my life in any way.
So buy or sell, Bill. You believe that Shador Sanders believes that Dylan Gabriel took a shot at him.
Buy. I do.
Buy.
But I also think it's very well addressed. He doesn't excuse him, and he also makes it sound like he doesn't care. Beat him on the football field.
Do you believe that he doesn't care? I feel like a lot of people say, I don't care what they say. Do you actually believe that he doesn't care what
they
say?
Yeah. I think that he cares, but I think it's not an unhealthy way. And we've seen him take shots at people, and it was obnoxious, but it didn't impact him. Shador, I'm talking about. So he's accustomed to kind of being in a little bit of a fracas with other players, with other quarterbacks. Also, whatever. I mean, why are we so thin-skinned? Like, it's okay for a little competitiveness to take shots. Who cares? Who cares? I mean, I like it, but it's not the end of the world if Dylan Gabriel took a shot, and it's not the end of the world if Shador Sanders goes, okay, bro, cool. We'll see.
Speaking of shots.
Okay.
Just like a great soap opera, General Hospital introduces key new plot lines to keep viewers intrigued. Jerry Jones has put the latest bit of chum in the water to get people talking about the Cowboys as he appeared on Michael Irvin's YouTube channel and took a shot at Parsons' agent, saying that the agent told Jerry to shove the contract up his ass, amongst other things as well.
Yeah.
He's not seeming like things are progressing very well there. Buy or sell, Bill. Micah Parsons will be a member of the Dallas Cowboys in 2026.
I mean, I'll sell in terms of it's possible he won't be.
Sell.
Oh, 26? Yeah, sell.
Sell.
I know you got a week one this year. I think it's probably too late to trade him. Next year.
Yeah, I think he'll be gone. Buy or sell, you've actually seen General Hospital.
Sell.
Okay, where did that reference come from? I liked it. I'm just curious what the inspiration was.
I feel like if you think soap opera, like just generally, that's usually the one talked about the most. I think it's still on TV. Like I've walked by it here in our cafeteria. They have a TV on. I think it's on ABC, I believe. Free plug, I guess, for them. And usually sometimes the afternoon be on.
I didn't know if it was still on the air, so I just Googled General Hospital, and what I got was General Hospital's Giovanni Mazza on if Gio and Emma will become a couple, and then a small part of me died that I'll never get back. I don't even want to know what that... Okay.
I guess credit to the producers and the writers for still figuring out new spotlights.
62 seasons.
Whoa! I did not realize it was that long.
Wow. At General Hospital.
Still going.
Yeah.
Wowza.
I know a guy who's married to one of the soap opera stars.
Interesting.
That's my story. Yeah, not really. I didn't really care. He brought up like 9 pounds. Okay, yeah. Do we have more of these questions?
We have one more.
Okay.
That's okay. Last one here.
Sure.
This is a big one, too.
Okay.
For the first time in his NFL career, Josh Allen will not take one snap during the preseason. Head coach Sean McDermott explained that protecting Allen's health is more important than getting a few snaps in meaningless preseason games. He didn't say the last part I had in there. Anyway, buy or sell. This could impact, lack of preseason, could impact Josh Allen's play in a negative way.
I'll tell you this. When Sean McDermott zigs, I zag. So buy, then it certainly could. I know he's had success, and I'm probably being unfair. Buy or sell, you're with me. I just have this general lack of confidence in him despite what he's done.
Buy.
Yeah. Not a single snap. Not one. The first snap's going to be in a game that counts. All right. We'll see. Maybe. Because
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I mean, it's preseason. I get it. What's one drive maybe the first week going to do? But it's also, if this is his rhythm, he won an MVP last year.
Well, right. You know,
He won the MVP because of the preseason snaps, Bill. That there's the take.
I mean, it's just a weird, it's a weird decision to make. Maybe it'll work out. We have a lot of candidates for Bum of the Week, and many of them are internal. I'm just going to be honest. Infinity on Infinity Crime coming up as we get into Bum of the Week after a sports flash from Chris LaPresti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
All right, Joe. Cowboys owner Jerry Jones continues to go on the public offensive with the Micah Parsons hold-in situation, among other stops over the last 24 hours for Jones. He joined Michael Irvin on his YouTube show. Hey, I talked to Micah back in March. We had this all nailed down. Now it's up to the agent to cross the T's and dot the I's.
Well, we've got this resolved in my mind for the Dallas Cowboys. And we've got it done. And if the agent wants to finish up the detail, which is should, and do all the paperwork, and he can do that, and we're ready to go. But as far as the amount of money, the years, the guarantees, all of that, we negotiate that.
Cowboys Thursday night season opener against the defending champion Eagles now less than 2 weeks away. You've got roster cuts on the way. ESPN's Adam Schefter reports the Vikings have checked in with the Panthers about potentially reacquiring 35-year-old wideout Adam Thielen, who is set to enter the final year of his contract. Malik Beasley, no longer a target of the federal gambling investigation conducted by the Eastern District of New York, potentially reopening free agency for one of the NBA's top shooters. From golf, second round action, Tour Championship from Eastlake, first round leader Russell Henley still atop the board, 9 under par. Tommy Fleetwood, Scottie Scheffler both one shot back. I'm Chris LaPresti.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. On this Friday, Bill Writer with you. This show is Writer Than You. We are on the Infinity Sports Network, and this NASCAR race preview is sponsored by WeatherGuard Truck and Van Equipment. They're just as driven as the hardworking pros they serve. Daytona International Speedway is the home of NASCAR's regular season finale as the Coke Zero Sugar 400 takes place on Saturday night. That's tomorrow. The playoffs will include the top 16 drivers from the regular season, with the last few spots determined by the 400 miles driven tomorrow evening. Exciting stuff. Bill Ryder with you. Thank you for listening to the show. Ryan Hickey, there are good things and bad things about producing me and producing the show. Bad thing, you have to show up for work on time. Not everyone's been able to accomplish that. It's a tricky requirement. You gotta show up. Good thing, I think I'm generally collaborative, right? I hope you feel like you have a big hand in shaping the show, right?
Outside of your Penn State sucks rants and segments, and I suck in terms of pop culture.
Yeah.
Outside of not allowing me to veto those segment ideas.
Sure.
Yes, very collaborative.
Here's something that I think is good for you, but you're going to think is bad for you. You're just going to have to deal with being uncomfortable, with discomfort, with saying things about maybe colleagues you don't want to, right? Come on in. The water's warm. Let's go swimming, which is my setup for what is going to be a little conflict-driven Bum of the Week.
Hallelujah, I'm a bum.
All he's doing is a whole lot of damn nothing.
I'm a bum.
You rotten bum!
I'm a bum.
They're a bunch of bums.
I'm a bum. I'm a bum. I'm a bum.
Who's the bum this week? Let's find out on Writer Than You.
All right, I got to I'll do the internal stuff first, right? Because there's a lot of candidates here. All right, a lot of candidates for Bum of the Week. What are you doing, dude? I literally emailed this to myself yesterday that said Bum of the Week. And then I saw something else later for someone else in the building. I'm like, oh my God, what are we doing here? That person also about to be mentioned. What are we doing with you saying, and I know we discussed this earlier, that you would rather watch the Clemson-LSU game than nobody would rather watch anything in America over Ohio State, Texas. And you know it, and I know it. And Yellow Dog knows it. Did you get that reference? So you're nominated for Bum of the Week because you're full of it, dude. You are full of it. The end.
That hurts.
The end. What a terrible, terrible take. You even said it. This is your tweet from 16 hours ago. Throwing a hot take at you real quick. And I saw that, and I almost shut my computer. I should have. I kept going. I'm more excited for Clemson LSU than I am Ohio State, Texas. You're telling us you're lying to us. Throwing a hot take at you. Because you know what a hot take is? A hot take is garbage. Having a real opinion that other people interpret as a hot take, that's their problem.
But that's exactly...
That's garbage.
It's unpopular because no one
says
nominee. It, and I the stones
you
to
don't
say
mean it.
Yes, I do.
You don't
yes,
mean
I think
it.
The fallout of the loser to me is going to be fascinating. fascinating. A lot on the line. Both teams, Texas. I am excited to watch the game.
This is as fake as a guy who goes, who's the hottest woman in the world right now? Who's the hottest woman on earth right now?
Let's just go with Sydney Sweeney, since she's...
Okay, done. This would be me saying, I got to tell you, if I went back in time to Columbia, Missouri, 2000, and it was Lori, who I'm now married to, love you, babe, or Sydney Sweeney of today, I'm taking Lori. No, you're not. You're full of it. You're a liar. Shut up. Just don't even bring it up then. I'm taking Sydney Sweeney. I'm sorry, Lori. I screwed up everything, but that's what I'm doing. What are we doing here?
I'm not saying Sydney Sweeney.
You're taking the sexy.
It's not.
You're taking the sexy Texas Ohio State. That's the Sydney Sweeney of sports games, and you know it, and I know it. Put some jeans on and deal with it. You're nominated for Bum of the Week. All right, that's one. That's one. Two. Okay, I don't want to get too into this. Pat Boyle did a. I missed this because I didn't see it. And by the way, Marco Belletti, if we had a star of the week, he would win because he went off on this. They ranked the all-time hosts who have been here. If you have Jim Rome, I know Jim's not on the network anymore. If you have Jim Rome as the 11th best person in the history of this network, and you don't include Doug Gottlieb, and you don't include Scotty Farrell, then you should be banned from talking about the network for the next 2 years. So Pat Boyle is 100% nominated for Bum of the Week. I like Pat. I don't even want to give him attention for this, because that's obvious. What are we doing here? And not trying to be a jerk, because I really like Andrew Bogish, but he better prepare himself when he gets back from vacation. You're on the list, and Gottlieb... Look, you can like Doug or not like Doug on a personal level. You can like Amy Lawrence or not like Amy Lawrence. You can like Jim Rome or not like Jim Rome. I don't know why you wouldn't like these people. Same for Scott Farrell. But this shouldn't be a popularity contest. And I know a lot of those people aren't here anymore, but give me a break. Jim Rome's not on the top 10? What are we doing? And I understand that Pete Bilotti was one of the voters, so that obviously is part of the problem. Sorry, Pete, but, like, come on. Okay. Boyle and you, 100% nominated. 100% nominated. I kind of want to nominate Bogish. Who did Bogish pick? Someone that wasn't even a full-timer? Anyway, Marco Bilotti already did it. And I actually, when I first saw it, I'm like, oh, good. These guys have the guts to, like, call out colleagues. Sure. Go at me or don't. I don't care. It's great. It's good radio. But not if you can do a cowardly, let's all pretend that we think each other are the best on the face of the earth and forget about Jim Rome and not do the work. Marco Belletti already did it. It's amazing. You should go watch it. All right. Pat Boyle's nominated. You're nominated. I got to not. All right. I'm leaving the building. Anybody else in the building? Anybody piss you off this week?
In the building, no. Stu's been on his best behavior this week.
Okay. Zamper doing anything?
No, we've actually gotten along recently. So no.
Any reason Gelb sent me a bunch of text messages about, I don't know, how this was like a great segment. Mm-hmm. Zach's at 5, huh? You're a better radio host than Jim Rome? I'm sure you liked it. Awesome. I'm not going to nominate him, though.
No? For Cloud in the Jury Pool? Okay.
All right. I'm going to nominate Greg McElroy. Saban joked about it, but getting wrong that Saban could come back. Jerry Jones is the main nominee of the week. You and Pat are probably going to be pretty thankful. Every week, Jerry Jones. Anybody else you want to put on here?
Yes. Few. The Big Ten, whether it's serious or not, proposing a 28-team college football playoff. I think it's fair to nominate Cracker Barrel for their rebrand.
Everybody's mad at Cracker Barrel. All right, I like the new. Okay.
Oh, okay.
No Cracker Barrel.
And I got one more. This one hits too close to home.
Right.
Anthony Richardson.
Oh, that's
you
a good
one. You lose a quarterback battle to Daniel Jones. Yeah. You're a bum.
Double nominee. Ducky Hines said, on behalf of me and Ryan Hickey and other suffering Colts fans, Chris Ballard and Anthony Richardson nominated. I'm going to put Lincoln Riley on here for being basic.
Ooh.
Being basic.
This is a tough one this week.
It's a tough
nominees.
One. Pat really has a case. You have a strong case.
I mean, compared to the crimes committed, this is like jaywalking. Come on.
I compared you earlier off the air to one of the most loathed people in sports media. And you
That was very, you know, you could be bum of the week for that. That was
I know,
a tough
but time. It was true.
No, it's not true.
No, my point was real. You're like, I mean everything I say. And I go, that's what I used to hear from. And I won't even say the guy's name. I inserted, you know.
It's true. Sorry.
Should be. Apology accepted. Stop doing it. Don't mean it at all. I actually don't think Sydney Sweeney's very attractive, sweetheart. Yeah, you do. Shut up. Still bring it up with your wife, then. I would have chosen you over Sydney Sweeney.
I think Sydney Sweeney's very hot.
Yeah, she's hot.
Yes, she's very hot, period. Right,
but you get my,
my LSU
point.
LSU Clemson, I think there's
more. Come on,
no,
stop. It's not. You know it's not. I know it's not. Stop. All right? What is this, the ISN draft? Like, just stop. You don't mean a thing you say. All right.
The Battle of Death Valley.
Did this guy win last week? I can't. For just telling us that you're all bad at your job. For telling us that you don't know what you're doing. For telling us you're going to ruin the Cowboys. Jerry Jones. You're the bum of the week, bro.
That's your bum of the week.
I detest you.
On Writer Than You.
Are you keeping a running log of who the winners are?
I am.
Did Jerry win last week?
No. Let me pull it up really fast. I don't think so.
I don't think he did either. Has he even won this year? That feels like a huge oversight by me.
Part of it, though, is like when he says a lot of things, almost like kind of an eye roll of, oh, there goes Jerry again.
Right, like your crazy uncle.
Last week, it was the Cleveland Browns for sabotaging Shedeur Sanders' chance trying to make the roster.
Got it.
I don't think, by my calculations, it does not look like that Jerry Jones has won Bum of the Week, at least up until April 18th.
Okay. Well, he's back. Man, what a mess. I never thought I would feel bad for Cowboys fans. I feel awful for them. This guy, we've already done this. They're gonna run him into the ground. He already has. Thank you to David Sampson. Thank you to Ryan Hickey, despite his takes. He has done an amazing job as the producer of this show, and his takes are good, too. They're fine. And thank you. I'm Bill Ryder. I appreciate you listening. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you back here on Monday on Ryder Than You.